Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. And this is scan number 2960. It's 2960. So tonight we're going to have an open mic discussion show. And I have Michelle Bless here. She's our minister. And she's also an author, the Michelle Bless Story. And she's a counselor. And, yeah, she's my sis and I'm her sis. And that's the way it goes. Okay. So I also have a 661 area code here. Is that Kim or who is this? 661?
Hello, Phil.
Well, hello. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, this is Phil.
Oh, Phil. Okay, hi. How are you? You all right?
Doing well, thank you.
Okay, good. That's good. I'm glad. All right. So anyway, tonight, if there's something that, Michelle, you'd like to speak about first, or Phil, if there's something you'd like to talk about, because on the open mic discussion nights, what we have is people call in, and if they have something on their mind they want to discuss or address or whatever, we can all talk about it and so forth. Otherwise, we come up with a topic. Phil, do you have anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about, yesterday we talked about signs of, bad relationships that involve domestic violence, the signs that a lot of women who are victims don't see. I want to talk about the signs of what a good relationship is.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that.
Talk about it a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, because I had gotten that information from www.healthline.org, or actually .com. So it's a very good article. And we had a good discussion yesterday on the things to look out for in, relationships that can pull us down and really just beat the heck out of us, okay? And meaning that literally, too, because that's what happens most of the time. So that was the red flags. On the flip side of the coin, though, this is how we as survivors, a lot of times we don't know how to find a good relationship. We think we see good in people, and I'm not saying there isn't some good in them, but they're not quite the right person for you because maybe they have a lot of bad in them or something that, you two would end up fighting over, and that would be the end of the relationship. So the good signs of a good relationship, well, I'm going to go down the list here a little bit. We can talk about it, and then we can get into emotional abuse, what that does as a child and how that works into adulthood. I have another good article over here. So, but the good signs of a relationship, you trust each other. Now, Michelle, and Phil, too, that we do have trouble with trust issues, okay? That's something that we do have. And if you don't have a good relationship, you're going to have problems with the trust issues. And number two, you can communicate clearly. If you're in a good relationship, you can communicate clearly. All right. Number three, you feel independent from your partner. Now, that means you're not joined at the hip. Do you know what that means, being joined at the hip? A lot of times partners are, you know, insist on being so close to each other they can't even breathe, for God's sake, and they can't even have their own interests. Okay, that's a bad relationship because maybe there's lack of trust, or maybe one person is a narcissist and they want their partner to actually, you know, do everything they do, tell them how to do it, where to do it, when to do it, and all this other stuff, and that's not a good relationship. But in a good relationship, you can have your own interests. Okay, that's why it says you feel independent from your partner. You appreciate each other. A lot of times in relationships, people do not appreciate each other as much as they should. Maybe both of them get up, they go to work, right? And they come home, and wifey is supposed to, you know, make dinner and then clean up after the dinner. And she's so tired to begin with. Maybe she had a really rough day at work. And to show appreciation, that it would be nice, say there's no kids involved, no big kids, you know, for the husband to help clean the table off, maybe help her a little bit with the dishes. That's showing appreciation, okay? Both partners have their needs met. Whatever your needs are, you meet those needs. That's give and take, and that's very, very important. You're able to resolve conflicts. A lot of times when people who have a bad relationship, instead of facing the conflict, what do? They walk away, or they leave the house because they don't want to get into a massive fight. Now, that's a bad relationship. If you have a good relationship, you're able to resolve the conflicts right there in the house and in a respectable way. You can spend some time apart, and it's okay. Like with my daughter, her husband's an avid hunter, and they have a cabin way up in the woods, and he has other guys that go up there, and they meet, and, you know, they hunt. They hunt in these woods pretty far out in Pennsylvania, from what I understand. And if my daughter was the type of kid that was insecure, she might think, ooh, maybe there's going to be snow bunnies up there, okay? You know what I'm saying? She wouldn't trust the husband, say, out of sight. And that can be for the guy, too. You know, if the wife goes off, say, for a few days to visit a relative, visit a friend, and he can't get off of work or doesn't want to go, he or she both should be able to go away and not feel, you know, threatened in any way. That's a good relationship. Trust is at the core of the relationship. You know each other's love language. I like that one. You know each other's love language. Sometimes when two people are so in love, you know, they really care about each other. They have a way of looking at each other. You know, they'll just give each other a look and a smile. And maybe they'll go over and squeeze each other a little bit and things like that. That's called love language. And in good relationships, you have that. You agree to disagree on certain issues. It's okay to disagree on certain issues. Could even be political. That's rare, but I'm just saying. Okay, you encourage each other to go after your goals. Many times in a bad relationship, and usually it's from jealousy, one spouse will be doing better at a job than the other. Well, maybe the other spouse has you know, kids going to school, and after they go through school, they're going to be able to come, say, get their doctorate, or they become a PhD, or, you know, whatever. And the other person then feels lesser than. That's a person who feels is suffering from low self-esteem, okay? And many times they can get jealous, and that's unfortunate because that's going to break up a relationship. Instead of saying, hey, I'm so proud of you, look what you're doing, and all this other stuff, they just seem to go into their own little shell because they already feel inadequate. So that's not good. Okay, that can actually ruin a relationship. Let's see. Okay, you are comfortable in your own skin. Now, that's something, that's an AA term. But on the other hand, it can be used in many different ways. It's not just AA. People who have very good relationships are comfortable in their own skin. They're comfortable with their partner. They're comfortable being around their partner. And they're just plain comfortable people. They have enough, good feelings about themselves, and they feel good about their partner. So rarely they can have disagreements. Everyone argues a little bit. Okay, it's okay to disagree, but it's the way you disagree. If you downgrade your partner or make your partner feel badly because they do disagree, then you're being bad to your partner, because we all can't be the same. So you see, that's a good relationship. What we spoke about last night took almost like a whole show, because unfortunately, how many people get divorced today, Michelle? Do you know? You know what the stats are on that?
I don't really know what the stats are on, but I do want to add something to what you were sharing about looking what signs that you look for good relationships. A sign is a good sign is when your partner is not trying to keep you away from your family, because a bad sign is when a perpetrator do keep you or isolate you from your family. A good relationship, that person won't do that. If anything, they will enjoy the fact that you have family, want to know your family, want to intertwine with your family. That's a good sign. Mm-hmm. Another good sign, your partner's not always putting you down. A bad sign is when a partner does put you down all the time. A good sign is when he gives you compliments. You know, say
That's
how beautiful
right.
you are, or if you're the opposite, you say how handsome he is. You know, it'd be good compliments. It wouldn't be anything negative all the time. A good sign is a person not trying to tear. A good sign is a person rising up your self-esteem, giving you compliments, talking with you and not at you. Those are different signs. A number one sign is the person not going to put their hands on you, beat on you,
right.
cut you out.
Right.
Just, you know. So those are good signs.
Absolutely.
Meaning to make it short that love do not hurt. So
that's right.
If you really want to know what for real, when you're in a relationship and that person is hurting you, then he don't love you, or she don't love you, because love don't hurt. It's time to, matter of fact, run. Do not stay in toxic, negative relationships. It's not healthy. It's not healthy for your mind. It's not healthy for your spirit. It's not healthy for your body. You can physically get ill.
That's right.
So that's what I want to add to that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and well said. It's amazing how a person can actually break another person, break their spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the things that they do, all the things they say, little actions, whatever, because they want to break their spirit. And it's so unkind. But I believe in karma. I do. If you're going to, hurt a person on person, on purpose, then you're going to get hit. You're going to get hit back one way or another. You will. I believe that. Now, this is something
Absolutely.
I happen to believe in. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight also, too, what we can talk about, Phil many times just listens. Once in a while, he will talk. Oops. I lost my page. Hold on a second. Get back here, ding back. I got this little thing that pops up, and he's trying to scare me. It's like a thug. It's a thug. That's what he looks like, a thug, all dressed in red. And he says that I better get security or I'm going to be in trouble. In other words, I'll lose my page. I just lost my page for a second. But anyway, okay.
Are you
I know it sounds funny.
Is that a joke or
Look,
are you serious?
This, This little bug and I go back and forth, okay? It's a little red, this red square that comes up, and, you know, you can have all different kinds of gadgets put on your machine, you know, to keep so you don't get, you know, screwed up and so forth, and, you know, so you don't get hacked and so forth.
Right.
But this guy, he comes on, and he covers half my screen, and then he wants me to call a certain number. And it's a scam.
Yeah, that's a scam. Automatically,
yeah.
Just know that that's a scam.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want you to open it up so they can get a virus. That's what that is. Don't ever open up anything that pops up on your computer. Just immediately just delete it, okay? Because
that's right.
Real businesses is not going to flash for you to call their numbers. The way the society is what's happening right now in the world, you know, with the virus, with the prices of different things going up, people are thirsty out here, and they are getting very pretty well, I'm trying to think of a word to use, but they're getting real swift. They're getting real good, these scammers, you know. Like, they can send you an email. If you open the email, boom, your stuff is open. They got you. If you call and they got you on the line, they can come through your phone. I mean, they got real swift out here. So you got to be real careful. I wanted to throw that out there because, you know, I work around the cops, so I get all the information. You know what I'm saying? So I don't answer phones that I'm not aware of. And then I got something on my phone that detects and it picks up this, and it would literally let me know, oh, this is a scam. Or it'll say more likely a scam. When I see that, I automatically don't answer and I block the number. If I get an email that doesn't, before I open any email, I always go, after I read, then you go down to the end of that email and you can literally see scam emails. Because real email is going to have the actual city, state, zip code. And if you're not familiar with zip codes for different states, then you might not know. I'm very familiar because I used to be a 411 operator. So I don't know. I can just pick up on emails and I immediately delete and trash it. I don't open it, you know.
Oh, absolutely. So. Yeah. No, I'm very careful that way.
You got to.
I noticed right before the show, I looked at the emails and there's two that I have to get rid of. It says voicemail 409 and then it gives a number. And I've never seen that before. I'm not going to open that up.
Mm-mm.
Other than that,
no,
on my email. No, you see what I'm saying? And I get these, you know, strange things that come on. So therefore, you know, I'm just, you know, walking the other way. I'll just get rid of it. I'll delete it after the show. But anyway, one thing we should talk about too, Michelle, and you're so good at this, is emotional abuse, okay? And for God's sake, what we've gone through. Yeah. And you see this, you know, even in our mission statement, okay, we talk about, of course, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. That's something that doesn't get enough attention. People don't understand how emotional abuse can affect a person, and actually for the for the rest of their life if they don't get the help they need. And it causes all different types of problems. And so it's just as equally as a problem as being physically, abused. And I feel sexually abused, too, because emotional abuse, let me tell you something. You get smacked in the head or something, or you get kicked around or beat up or whatever. Chances are you can't heal. But what does it do to your psyche? What does it do to you emotionally? That's what doesn't go away so often.
Can heal eventually, but emotional, that's harder.
Yes.
Emotional scars are much harder than physical.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
People say, well, how can you say that? Well, first of all, I've been abused in all areas. So the physical part eventually will heal. The pain will stop stinging. The pain will stop hurting on your body. But that emotional and that mind abuse, it doesn't go away like that. Because it tears you down and it's more painful, and that pain stays. Where does it stay? In your mind and in your emotions. It's longer than the physical pain. Because
it's true.
Physical pain, watch this, when you have physical pain and we feel it, right? So we get a black, say, I'll use me because this happened to me. Get a black eye and a busted lip. Well, okay, I'm crying. It's hurting real bad, the pain. Then all of a sudden, after a couple of hours, okay, that pain stops stinging. But guess what? Yeah. In my mind, the pain is still there because it's replaying itself over and over and over again, you know, in my mind and in my emotions. And then I go into a dark, deep depression. And it's like being hit over and over and over and over again. And that pain lives longer. It's horrible. It's horrible.
It is horrible. And you know, even a look can do that. My mother gave me a look that was so filled with hate. Now, I told you this, but I haven't told anybody
you
else.
You did?
Yes, I
did. Wow.
I was 14 years old. A lot of things happened between 14 and 17, too. But anyway, I was 14 years old, and the look of hatred in my mother's face when she was looking at me, I was lying in bed, trying to go to sleep, and she walked in my room, and she was just looking at me, and the light was behind her, so I could see her face. I could see her face, the way she was standing. That look scared me worse than anything that anybody could have done to me. I mean, I froze. I absolutely froze.
What?
And then after she
like
left the room.
It's like somebody stabbing you. It's like someone just, a look at, because I experienced that, Carol, the way my dad used to look at me. It had me in such terror. It's like someone just stabbed me or just knocked the wind out of me on top of the fear. So, that was a good example you used. That's real.
Yes,
it's
it is.
It's devastating. And that
it's
pain
ugly.
Is long-lasting.
I never forgot it. I actually rolled over and started to cry after she left. And I thought to myself, my God, what could I have done that could have been so bad that she'd stand there and look at me like that? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I want to say something. You just said something. Do you know, I now understand why you don't cry?
Yeah, I don't cry. No.
Mm-hmm.
Very rarely.
I know you don't. Because, see, when we cried when we were younger, and we cried so much, oh, my God, cried so much. Year after year, I'm talking about beginning 2 years old, 3 years old. You, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so forth and so forth. By the time I became, well, let's put it this way. I cried all my life until I went in the military because I just turned cold. I built such a hardness in my heart that I refused. I felt like crying would make me look weak. And I didn't want to look weak anymore.
Well, I used to get sent outside, and it didn't matter if it was 2 degrees out. Get out of here.
That's right.
And so I was about 8 years old last time I cried. You know, Bill's on the line here. I wish you'd bring him on. I see he's here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Brother Bill. Love you.
What's up? Love you, too.
We got 602 area code here.
Too. Yeah. Who is it?
Yeah, who is this? 602 area code. Oh, hi, honey. How are you?
I'm fine.
That's good. Yeah, we're talking about emotional abuse. And
you talked on top of her. Who is it?
It was Kim.
Oh, Kim. Hi. Hi, Kim.
No, I said Pam.
Oh, did you say
Pam?
Pam? Oh, see, people were talking. I couldn't hear you right. Okay. Well, your voices are very similar. Yes, you are. But anyway, we're talking about emotional abuse because emotional abuse is something that can wreck a person's life. And just by looks, gestures, make you feel less than, ignoring you. There's all kinds of ways to emotionally abuse a person, you know. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, and, you know, a lot of times we don't talk about emotional abuse because it's not physical, it's not sexual. I once had someone say to me, years ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that they don't want to come on the show because they're only emotionally abused. Well, we all know, you know, what emotional abuse feels like. Most of us do anyway. The put downs, the being left out, okay, made to feel less than. This is emotional abuse.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
You can continue. Some people can continue to do you like that for as long as you're around them. It can start off as a child. I mean, it can happen in families where I know myself personally of a situation where there was a child in the home that was continually being emotionally abused by the peers and eventually physically abused and also by the parents. So it's like, and they're still suffering from it because they still treat this person the same way.
That's traumatizing. People need to understand when you get traumatized like that, that doesn't go away overnight. That doesn't go away. It's like you reliving it over and over again. It shuts you down.
Right. They just continue to do it.
Yeah. I live in a prison in my mind. In my mind. Like, I was afraid to go outside. I had my daughters would go. I would write a list. Oh, I'm getting emotional just thinking about that. Jesus. I would write a list of things I need and open my window enough for them to get my notes and the money. 10 years I lived like that.
Wow. Yeah.
So I tell people that's nothing to play with. And then, you know, some people be harsh. And this is the famous thing I hear all the time, and I'm sure Brother Bill will agree, all you guys. It happened so long ago. Wow, you still talking about that? Get over it. Excuse me? Get over it.
And then, of course,
guess
that's
what?
One of the... Okay.
Oh, go ahead, Brother Bill.
No, I was just going to say that's one of the worst things you can say to a survivor if he or she is trying to share with you or starting to share with you, because you'll shut him right down. That means that you don't get it.
And that's another hurt. See, for me,
when
people used to say that to me, This is before I got healed from anything, and I'm still in my healing process, okay? But I'm saying back then, before I met you guys, before I went to get help, and I would get to a point where I would start talking about, Dad, that's all you do is talk about what happened to you, Michelle, when you was a kid. Get over it. And then on top of that pain, that right there would give me more pain. Like, Dad, nobody loves me, for real. Like, nobody don't want to hear me. Nobody don't want to hear me talk. And then I feel stupid, and I go, well, maybe I should get over it. And then I isolate more. Oh, no, I don't want to be around nobody because I'm not a good person. I'm still talking about stuff that I need to get over. I allow people to put that in my mind. It's not good. It's not good. That's not good.
No,
like
it's
that.
Not. No, it's not. And no,
I,
no.
When I meet people that are in that moment of trying to heal, they're in their, you know, in their recovering stage, and you can see the pain and they're crying, you know, some of them got comfortable to trust me and they would talk, and they were like, you know, I had one lady said, when are you going to tell me to be quiet? I'm like, excuse me? She said, when are you going to tell me to be quiet? I know I'm talking too much. I said, sweetie, take all the time you want. You don't have to be quiet. This is your story. This is your pain. Allow yourself to feel it. Because I was never given that. You know, I was always told, shut up and be quiet, Michelle. Shut up and be quiet. You say one more thing, I'm going to punch you in your face.
Yep.
At 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. That's traumatic.
Of course it is. That's horrific. So you see, this is emotional abuse. Yes, it can turn physical. But what you're speaking about, you know, there are times, okay, my mother found rosary beads under my pillow, all right? And I was always afraid that she'd find them. And there was one time, I remember not long ago, that she did find them. She made fun of me so badly for I don't know how many weeks, to be honest with you. And it was always at the dinner table. So my stepfather was there, my stupid brother was there, I was there, and whoever was in the house was there. And, you know, she just made fun. I would have rather taken the punch than to go through all those weeks of listening to that. And I couldn't leave the table. I thought, well, I'll eat upstairs in my bedroom. I wouldn't have minded. I had a TV up there. Oh, no, no. I couldn't go upstairs. I had to stay at the table, and I had to take it week after week after week. Now, those are things you don't forget, okay? I mean, getting hit is bad. That's why I said that before. Getting hit is bad, and it's not acceptable. But the emotional abuse, which you can't see because it's what the person displays, all right? Now, you say you had to hand out a note and the money because you didn't want to leave the house. It's like you had, what do you call that, like agoraphobia or something. You know what I'm saying? You didn't want to leave the house.
I have fear of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had that also, only for a short time, though, Michelle, because I like to shop. I'm bad, all right?
Something bad happened to me.
I'm so bad. Something bad happened to me, and I started to stay in the house because I didn't want to go out of the house. Because I didn't want people looking at me. I felt dirty, okay? This is what happens when you're sexually abused or humiliated to the umph degree, whatever. You want to stay in the house where you feel maybe, you know, safer, maybe.
I was going to say, because you feel safe, of course. You feel safe. I felt ugly. I felt unloved. I felt dirty. I felt unliked. I just felt all these negative things. And I felt not worthy. I felt nobody wanted me. I felt no one wanted me to be around them. And then fear, it was an overwhelming fear. And you mentioned about your mom had you sitting at the table and making fun of you, and that brought back a memory, and I haven't thought about this in a long time. It was a couple of times where my dad would make my brothers sit and my mom, and he would make fun of me. He would say how I was found on the doorstep, or sometimes he would say I was found in a garbage can, and I was Aunt Jemima, I was ugly, and he made them laugh, and if they didn't, he would hit them. And I can see in between my mother and my brothers, fake laughing, the tears in their eyes. But they were so afraid of him. We lived in fear.
Yeah.
I was so afraid of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you just don't get over. You just don't.
I was afraid of my mother. I think my stepfather was afraid of her also. My brother was a demon. And he always got his way, and he could do no wrong. And they spent thousands and thousands of dollars to keep him out of jail because he was a pedophile. You know, the right people, you can pay them off. And the last time I saw her, well, this is what I saw. And the last time, I don't know why she showed me this, but she showed me her checkbook. Now, this is years ago, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
They had already spent $130,000 then, years ago, and it was all for attorneys. We have a 617 area code. Who am I speaking to?
This is Dr. Nancy. How are you guys doing?
How are you doing, Dr. Nancy? How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, thank you. I just
tuned
in. I'm listening
emotion.
To you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What were you guys talking about?
Well, we're talking about emotional abuse and what it does, you know, to you as a child and how it can actually go into adulthood if you don't get the help that you need and how it affects you. Now, another thing here, according to this article, emotional abuse happens when a child is repeatedly told they are worthless, unloved, or feel they are alone, rejection, hostility, teasing, bullying, yelling, criticism. Also exposure to family violence. Many of us NASCA, yeah, many of us have seen all that. So do you realize how emotionally abused we are?
Very traumatic. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes, ladies. Emotional abuse is very, very, very traumatic. A lot of times people don't realize how deep it goes. But just hearing you guys talking about it a little bit as I just came in, I can definitely relate. It definitely does play a big, it does cause a big effect on you. Being told that you're worthless or that you're stupid. I mean, all those things, you internalize that as a child. And so we have to really understand that that affects children. It really does. Words have bonds. Words create bonds. And so if you're being told that you're stupid, you're being told that you're worthless, you're being told that you're ugly. I went through a lot of childhood bullying, and that affected me a lot. It affected my trust. It affected my self-esteem. And it definitely did have an impact on me. I have severe trust issues. I don't trust anyone. And I still have a very big heart. I'm still a big softy, and I always share that. And I don't want to change that about myself. So I'm very sensitive, and I just stay away from anybody that makes me feel unworthy. But those words, they're very, 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 very strong, and they do form bonds. And so I do understand, and I do agree. I mean, I was told all kind of things. I was called all kind of names. And I felt ugly. I was called the ugly black girl, big lip, big nose, big forehead, ugly black girl consistently. You know, I had one of my grandmothers told me she should have flushed me down the toilet. I couldn't believe she told me that. I mean, that was so traumatic to me. Like, you know, the boys were favorite. She favoritism or favorited the boys, and she told me that. I couldn't believe that you would say those words to someone. But, you know, I'm glad that I, you know, that I went through those things so I could help other people. Unfortunately, I can understand when people talk to me about certain things. But, you know, even being born a girl, I felt like I was a mistake. And just being born different color, different ethnicity, from a different country, my accent, anything, everything about me was wrong. And being told that consistently, you start believing that. You know, today I appreciate and I embrace my differences, but those things, it took a long time to get to this place. I'm still recovering. Every day I'm still recovering. I have to use words of affirmation and words of love and, you know, listen, I read scriptures and everything that is positive, I do. But I've had people that I love and that I trust and that I respect abuse me and be mean to me, and those things do hurt. So I appreciate you guys talking about this topic, because there are people right now today contemplating suicide. And this is a very serious, right now, today, every couple of minutes, people are dying by suicide. This is a very serious topic. And it really comes from being broken down emotionally. Emotional abuse is just as bad as physical abuse. Psychological abuse is just as bad as physical abuse. And so we have to talk about it. I'm so glad you ladies are talking about it today, tonight.
Yeah.
So important.
Let me ask something. I'm so glad I was just about to say, Nancy, what you just said. What I was going to say is this. We are still here, and we are sharing, you know, about emotional abuse, which I am so grateful we are today, because I, you know, do you know how many people, I'm talking about from children to teenager and even adults, that had took their lives because they couldn't handle it.
Right.
They couldn't, people took their lives because they could not handle it. And that's why I'm glad we're sharing and talking about it, to give hope to ones who are contemplating wanting to hurt themselves or feel like they're alone. So this thing is real.
And I'm glad you said that, because we are all survivors. We fought that spirit, I'm sure. And, you know, I'm a survivor of suicide. And I and like I shared with you guys in the past, I lost my sister to suicide in 2020. And, you know, she was seeing a counselor. She was under medication. A lot of these medications have some of the side effects are suicide, ideations and or thoughts of suicide. And, yeah, I mean, if you're constantly being told you're trash or you're not worthy or you're ugly or you feel like a mistake, after a while when you start hearing that so much, you start believing it and you start fighting with that spirit of suicide because you feel unworthy.
Right.
Yeah, you feel unworthy and you feel just rejected consistently. You get tired. And I've been there, you know, where I felt exhausted. And we've all have experienced something similar where it's like, after a while, it's like, Lord, really? Is this my life? You're going through abuse from people, then you're hearing mean words from other people, and then you're feeling rejected from other people and all that stuff. After a while, it weighs down on you. But, you know, we just want to remind people that a lot of times when you go through these things, it's not for you. Our ministry, all of us have a ministry, and it's bigger than us, you know. And so a lot of times when we go through this, it's really to equip us to help other people. And I know it's tough. You know, I remember, and I still feel like this sometimes, where I'm like, really, God, like, you still let me feel like this, or you're still letting people make me feel like this, you know. And I go through this, like, I'm Spanish, but when I'm around white Spanish people, I feel unworthy because they're like, oh, you're this or you're that. I hear all kind of things in different circles, I feel unworthy consistently, whether it's in the black community, in the white community, in the Spanish community. It's a consistent feeling of rejection. And you get tired. You feel exhausted. Your head hurts. Your chest gets tight. Your hands shake. And you just feel like, you know, why am I here, God? You know, I've had fights with the Lord, like literally. Mm-hmm. And I know some of you guys could relate who have been through abuse. Yeah, it's not just me. I know you guys can relate where it's like, you're like, I know I have a calling on my life. I know I love the Lord. But then you're like, why am I here again? Because I'm still fighting. You get exhausted and you get tired. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have to remember that it's bigger than us. And we're going through this, unfortunately. We are going through this. But we do go through this to help other people, because now there's times that I've heard Miss Michelle, and there's times that I've heard you, Miss Michelle, talking about how you're able to help some of these children, you know what I mean? And Miss Carol, I've heard you talk about some of the issues, some of the things you've gone through with addiction, and I can relate to all of that. You know, I've gone through addiction, I've gone through shame, and I've gone through abuse. I've been kidnapped.
Yeah.
Some of the things you guys talk about, I'm like, wow, thank God that you guys could share that, because some people cannot speak about this stuff. Some people cannot open up about this stuff, and they're suffering in silence and in shame.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of shame behind the abuse. But the fact that we're able to share about it and talk about it, it helps somebody else say, wow, I went through that too. You know, I went through
that
too.
Yes, ma'am. I know that feeling of shame. I try to kill myself. I stopped counting after the 37th time of suicide.
Wow.
I know I'm a walking miracle. It wasn't nothing but the God that I serve that kept me. And keep in mind, sister, you know, I used to be an atheist. I didn't believe in him because
I missed that part. Okay, sis.
Girl.
You better testify, girl.
Let me say this real quick. I remember I was like, I think either 4 or 5 years old, and my dad beat my mother so bad that he drug her in her own blood, and then he left.
Oh, my God.
And then I was standing at the door, and then my mother crawled in her blood. I'm getting choked up. I'm sorry, y'all.
Oh, my Lord.
Crawled
help me, Lord.
In her blood. And then lift herself up at this. She had a little table and a stand and a chair and a lamp stand and this big old book on it. And I remember she went up and she opened the book and she was crying like fiercely. And she said, "Oh God, forgive him, for he do not know what he done.
Know what he's doing."
And I'm like, "Mama, who are you talking to?" I put my hands on my hips like, "Mama, who are you talking to?" And she said, "Oh, I'm talking to Jesus. He loves you." "No, he don't. He don't love me."
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom was like, "Don't say that. No, I don't want to hear nothing about this person. I don't want to hear nothing. You're always talking about him. You always reading that Bible. If he love us, then why are he allowing all this to happen to us?"
Yeah,
at age between 4 and 6 years old. So I had such this hatred, you know. And now, I'm not going to talk into this because I know this is not what it's about, but I'm going to say this, that who I am today, if it wasn't for his grace and mercy, you got to understand something. As a child, when you're being abused, you don't, well, let me say for me, a person can tell me, well, this person love you or that person love you. Well, if the actions show different, I don't believe you. So you can't tell me that someone loves me if I'm not being shown that. So the enemy was showing me his, what you call love, which we know the enemy is not love. But I'm saying where I was, you know, because I was in the occult, and I ain't gonna go deep into it, but, you know, I was in the occult, and it was real, you know, and I was given these gifts and these powers. And so I was worshiping the devil because he gave me powers. Okay. So then I finally got connected with the Lord, and someone said to me, everything you did, Michelle, didn't work for you. You still depressed. You still sad. You still suicidal. So why don't you give him an opportunity? But and I was so tired and broken at that time. But in 1997, I was so tired. And I said, okay, the God that my mother serves, if you're real, because I was on my way to commit suicide. I was on my way to kill myself. And I looked up and said, the God that my mother serves, if you're real, and you help me.
I love that, though.
And you help me, and I'll serve you. Well, guess what? I ain't looked back since because this unseen God that I serve today turned my life around.
He loves that.
Now, I had to get that out. I had to get that out because anything that I say and do, especially when it comes to the end, I'm going to always give my God his glory because it's because of the grace and mercy of him. But again, I'm so glad that we're sitting here talking about it because I don't know who's listening. But let me say this real quick to whoever's listening.
You're not alone.
Or whoever in the chat room. We are here sharing these things because we have the experience. We've been there. We've been there. We don't of shame and despair and people say you're ugly or don't nobody want you, don't nobody love you. Oh my God, all of
you
us
believe
here,
the lies.
We've been there. Yes, and you believe it. Guess what? We believed it too. I believed that lie for so long in my life, but you know what? What helps me is to continue to talk about it. And for me, I tell people whatever you can use to give you that peace and comfort, whether you sew or knit or draw or you listen to music or you write poetry or whatever it is that helps you give you your peace, continue to do that and talk about it while you're doing that. Because what I did, I just started writing. Somebody gave me a notebook and a pen and said, look, write your frustrations down. Next thing I know, I filled the notebook, and they gave me another one. See, I didn't know what they were doing, but I realized I kept writing, but I kept talking about it, and I was getting it out, and I held so much in. I thought I was going into a seizure because, you know, you cry so hard or you get angry so mad. My whole body was shaking. I used to hit the walls and tear pillows up, but it worked for me because guess why? Because I'm still here. If I would have stayed in my own mind of this misery, guess what, guys? I would not be here. I know I would not be here if I didn't give the opportunity to seek the help and listen to people that are just like me, that have been through some trauma, that and I can relate to that person. When I came to NASCA in 2012, I met Carol on Facebook. She introduced me to Brother Bill. That's why I love Brother Bill so much. But when he started talking to me, I was so scared because guess what? I thought it was only me out here going through what I went through. I didn't know it was some other people. When he started sharing his story, oh, my God. I said, you know what? I'm going to continue in this healing process for me. That was in 2012. Okay. I'm like, I'm not alone. So that's what I want the audience to know. And we all want you to know, you are not alone. You don't have to go through this by yourself anymore. We are here. You ain't got to come and you ain't ready to share your story, but just continue to listen. You know, go on the website. There's names and numbers of us. You know, you call us. For me, you can call me anytime. You can, you know, if you just want a listening ear, I'll be your listening ear just so you can talk. Because it
helps.
That's
right.
And that's what
now,
I want
to say. Now, let me say something here. Okay. Mm-hmm. You guys really got into something heavy, heavy, heavy. And a lot of us, you know, well, even for me, for God's sake, for a short period of time, God was like on the back burner, okay? Because I was out running the streets and all this other stuff. I had to leave home because of the situation that I was going through there. I was safer on the street. That's the way I felt. And then later on, God came back into my life, and I do believe that that church down there in Red Bank, which I speak about at times, they saved my life. Now, one thing I do want to get through to here, okay, with the childhood trauma and the effects of, yes, it causes mental health disorders, anxiety, attachment, PTSD, and depression disorders, self-harm, or suicidal thoughts, in other words, ideations. I had them too, including cognitive disorders, developmental delay, eating disorders, and too many physical ailments. How many times people say to you, gee, you've got a headache again, oh, you've got a backache again, oh, you've got this, you got that, you got this, you got that. Right. Well, what do you got? Why don't you zero in on one thing? You know what I'm saying? So a lot of people do have fibromyalgia, okay? Fibromyalgia usually lasts about 2 to 4 weeks when you have a good bout of it.
Right.
And then it goes away, okay? You may not have another case of that for a year. And I learned that from two doctors that were on the web, which I told Michelle about. And what that was, one had fibromyalgia. They were not trying to sell anything, no products, nothing. They were just talking about fibromyalgia. And they have done case studies, and the case studies do show that those of us who have been physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually neglected, all the abuses, and it doesn't even have to be all the abuses. Trauma is trauma and how it affects the person. And can absolutely develop fibromyalgia. And boys can have fibromyalgia. And now they're finding out, too, not too long ago, that teenagers can suffer from fibromyalgia because, you see, look at the backgrounds we've come from, okay? So by the time you're a teenager, you've had years already of maybe being beaten or being sexually abused or emotional abuse, or people are telling you you're stupid, you're funny looking, whatever, you know, whatever they say. I had a case which I'll never forget. I was in the store with my mother and my goofy brother, and I always call him Goofy for as long as he's alive. I think he's still alive, but I'm not sure, and I don't care. He was one of my abusers. But the three of us, you know, we were there. We were in the store. And this guy came over to my mother, and he was a florist because we were in the flower business, and they're very well known, and they're quite wealthy people. There's no reason this God's earth why I had to steal clothing, okay? I was abused. I was neglected. Now, the guy walks up to my mother, and he says, hi, Maxine. That was her name. How are you doing? And blah, blah. They're talking back and forth. And he says, and who's this man standing next to you? Because my brother was tall, and he was five years older than me. And so my mother said, oh, this is my son. This is Bill. This is William. And the man's shaking hands with him, and she doesn't introduce me. So I'm standing there, and I'm feeling very awkward. And also, I felt very little. I felt nothing. Finally, the guy looks down at me, and he's staring at me. And he looks at my mother, and he says, well, who is this little girl here? Oh, that's Carol. Never forget it. Never forget it. Now, you see, little things like that actually turn into big things because it does. Because when we're pushed aside, okay, and not part of, say, in a family, we feel dirty, yes. We feel mm-hmm. like there's something wrong with us. My mother was mm-hmm. famous for gaslighting. She was wonderful
wow.
with gaslighting with me. So you see, mm-hmm. we have been through all the traumas. And it says here traumatic experiences may cause years of problems, terror,
yeah.
Helplessness, psychological
That's
problems,
right.
heart pounding, nausea,
mm-hmm.
loss of bowel or bladder movement. Oh, my God. I don't like
right.
that one. I never saw
oh
that
my
one
God.
Before.
That's
it. Gross. I
yes.
didn't know that.
All kinds of issues.
That's terrible.
True.
Yes. But
yes.
And then it from kidshelpline.com. See, I always have all the names. I write them down. From kidshelpline.com, which
That's
is a very good site,
mm-hmm.
it says can affect a child both physical and mental health. A child may experience mm-hmm. feelings of confusion,
mm-hmm.
anxiety, shame,
mm-hmm.
guilt, frequent
shame.
Crying, if you're allowed to, right, Michelle? Over,
all those things you name it, I'm telling you. Well, I'm just going back when I was a kid. All that stuff you're talking about, I experienced
yeah.
all that.
Yeah.
All of it.
I think many of us have powerlessness.
Yeah.
We feel
and,
we're just a kid,
yeah.
okay? We're just a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, how are we going to fight back? It says those who suffer emotional abuse from parents usually report the most severe post-traumatic stress symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's the emotional.
Yeah.
Where you said before, early on in the show, where it breaks you physically, spiritually, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The spiritual. This type of abuse is considered to be most damaging, more than physical abuse and neglect. So you see,
mm-hmm.
emotional abuse is a biggie. Until we, you know, find, like, I feel like I found some good information here so we can better
mm-hmm.
understand, you know, like, I didn't know about the bladder stuff. I don't want to go there. And, but, you know, I never thought of that. I really just didn't. It's terrible what it does to a person. And it says long-term effects because of poor treatment from parents. Then when
That's
you get
right.
older, you get high
mm-hmm.
blood pressure. You can suffer from that. You get
Come
cardiac
That's
problems.
True.
Yeah.
A lot of
I
people
have cardiac
have
problems.
I'm glad you said that. A lot of people.
Yeah.
What? Oh, I didn't know you had cardiac problems.
I had a heart attack a couple of years ago. It was minor, thank God. I popped some aspirin and went to sleep with the angina
oh,
pounding
God.
in my chest.
Lord,
that's what I did.
And how? By yourself? You try to be too tough now. You got? Did you call? Who came? Did you call anybody for help?
Nobody. I didn't call 911 or anything. See, I have angina anyway, but I never had it like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to believe
What's
that
angina,
it was a heart attack.
I don't know. What's angina?
Angina is when you have pain in your chest, your jaw, it goes down your arm. You're thinking you have a heart attack. It doesn't have to be, though. But you see, I found out because 2 or 3 weeks later, I guess it was, I finally went to the doctor. And, you know, the EKG showed that I had a minor heart attack.
Girl, you know God was with you. That was number
For real. Like,
girl.
I'm Lord,
girl, what you talking about?
My mouth is open. Like she made it sound like regular at the beginning.
I
was didn't have no questions. You know what?
I'm going.
Miss Carol. You know
no,
what?
I know. Well,
mean?
That's the way I am. I don't like doctors. Excuse
no.
me. I'm sorry.
Here,
no, you're
like
medical doctors. Because
here,
a lot of times they're screwy. A lot of times they're screwy.
Mm-hmm. You guys just say. They are screwed sometimes.
And they send me to one person, to another
severe.
Person, to another person. And
right.
I still have no answers.
I still
so
do
I don't like
My daughter
was
that this weekend.
If you have any issues with your body, go to the hospital. Go to the emergency room.
Right.
Don't play with that.
No, you're right.
You know,
you're right.
I don't get me wrong. There is some bad doctors, but God uses people in
Wait.
The hospital.
Minister Michelle. What I was
yes,
trying to
ma'am.
Say, well, I'm sorry. But yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Woman of God. What I was saying was, seriously, a lot of times we go through things and we don't deal with it. We don't address it because we're so used to and normalized in our mind to be strong.
I did that. That's why I'm saying it. What you just said.
Right.
I was just like her.
You were even both of y'all been blowing my mind today because I'm like, wait a minute, like what
I refused to go to the hospital. I know God.
I should have gone, but I didn't go because I'm bullheaded. Now I've got to see if anyone else has any comments to make here. Well, you know I'm bullheaded. Okay. Now here, maybe Bill wants to say something, or maybe
Mr.
Philip
Bill
wants to say something.
Wow.
I was trying to be patient. I was trying to be patient.
Well, I'm here. Go ahead. Is there something you want to say?
How are you?
I know you are. But I'm just saying. I've been here waiting for a moment. There's a difference between expecting God or a doctor to do something for you and taking the help when it's available, because we resist an awful lot. This is what Carol's talking about, really. There is medical help available for her, but she doesn't go show up for it. Same thing happens in churches. So I don't think the problem is that God is not, for example, forgiving and so forth. It's that we don't show up for it.
That was good, too. Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And when we're experiencing our emotional self, what we're experiencing is that's really where we live, in our emotional self. You know, you can't shake it off. You can walk through it. You can get through it. But pretty much any day that you're in it, you're in it. You can't not be in it. Well, that means that we have we have work to do to figure out what we can do that's sort of steps towards the right direction. But I just want to make the point that all these other traumas are obviously really bad, but the thing that distinguishes the emotional, or you could call it spiritual stuff, is that it is who we are. You know, it's where we live.
Right.
I'm calling it our self, you know. The other stuff is junk that happens to us, but this is how we live. So it behooves us to really be working on that. And then the last thing I want to say is that when we're children, I mean, this is what we're talking about tonight is all adult stuff. When we're children and we're abused, there's really nothing we can do about it as children.
Mm-hmm.
We might be
more limited.
We're weaker, we're smaller, we don't have the dexterity, but we don't have the mental capability either. And unless you're lucky enough for somebody to take you literally by the hand and introduce you to the healthcare system, you're not going to get it until you're older. And in the whole time that you're older, you're struggling, because if you don't get help when you're a child, you enter your adulthood.
Think about that.
With the trauma, most of us experience the trauma for a number of years before we decide there is something we can do about it. As Michelle said, taking the suggestions that we're hearing around us, and then it's up to us. Nobody can do it for us.
It depends how strong we are.
To
be able to handle that, it's on you now. Some people are, like, still in a baby state. We're still in shock. I mean, I'm still in a shock baby state. We're struggling now. It's a process every day. Some days I feel stronger, and some days I'm like, oh, my God, what is this? And then seeing what's going on in the world, I'm fighting my anxiety, trying to keep it low. It's a process, y'all. I'm not going to lie.
But sister, listen. I want to piggyback on what Brother Bill said. He said we were talking about adult stuff, which is true, right? But the key thing he says, but when you're a kid, see, that's the point I was trying to make. When you suffer so much as a child, and we look at adults to protect us, and those same adults abuse us on top of strangers, right? So we're kids, and then we turn into a teenager because we ain't got no help. We didn't get any help as a kid, right? So all this trauma. We carrying it. And then what you just said, still feel like that kid. So you know that little Michelle still living me.
Our little one in our hearts and spirits, right.
Yes.
I want to say something to that. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Because I did mention kids. Because I have kidshelpline.com. It can affect a child, both physical and mental health. A child may experience feelings of confusion, anxiety, shame, guilt, frequent crying over whatever, I can't read my writing there, and powerlessness. Remember we're talking about power. This is about kids. Those who suffer emotional abuse from their parents usually report the most severe post-traumatic stress symptoms. This type of abuse is considered to be most damaging, more than physical abuse and neglect. Now, the rest of it, yes, does go on into what happens if children don't get help, because that's where it says long-term effects because of poor treatment from parents. That's where the high blood pressure comes in, and then, yes, it can turn into cardiac problems, depression, and immune dysfunctions due to long-term stress. So it's from childhood. This article covers, and it has several different authors, but it covers from childhood into adulthood. That's what it does.
Yes.
So I was trying to combine the two. I wanted to combine the two because so often, Bill's right, we don't get the help that we need. I certainly didn't get any help as a kid. I'm sure most NASCA people didn't, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And what happens is it goes from one stage to another stage to another stage, and that's what happens. And we might end up dead, either by our own hand, because, look, I've got a nice scar on my wrist. It's right on my vein. At 17, I was cutting myself up. I was going to kill myself. And I told you before, my mother was on one side and my stepfather was on the other side, and they both said, do it and do it right. So that's why I was
Can I say something?
I was safer on the street.
Yes,
ma'am.
Can I make a comment? Who's that? Pam.
Hi.
They were
monsters.
Hi. yes, I just wanted to say that I witnessed this going on for several years with a relative of mine, and I tried to get help. I tried going to protective services several times. I made hundreds of reports, and I spoke to people. I let them know that there was a lot of emotional abuse going on as well as some physical abuse, but the emotional abuse was just like, I could see the person suffering so much from the emotional abuse because their siblings were allowed to abuse them as well. Mm. And they ended up with six of them. So where you're talking about somebody being, it was just so much going on. And they would just treat him like, and he would just cry, and he was a teenager. He would cry. He would go out in public. He'd sit at the table where everybody's out at dinner. They'd be at a dinner table. They wouldn't sit with him. They all go sit together, and they all talk together. They all shared everything together, you know, like on the phones and everything. They shared and talked to each other.
Right.
They wouldn't talk to him. They would, if he was to get in a car, we're going somewhere, and he was to go try to get in a car with them, they would all go and get in another car, you know, to leave him, you know, either with me or, you know, basically just with me. The parent, she basically allowed it. She encouraged it. And it just went on and on. And, to where the person eventually, by the time they were, in high school, they would tease him while he was in school. These are his own siblings. When they get on the bus, they would tease him. When he got to be on the playground or outside to playing a game with them, like basketball or something with other kids in the neighborhood, they would jump on him.
At one
point, I called the ambulance because his brother had punched him in the chest. He was sickly as it was, and his brother punched him in the chest, and he just kind of laid out on the sidewalk. Nobody came to get him or anything like that. I think he laid down in the street at one point, and I think a neighbor called, and then they called me about it. And the ambulance wouldn't take him to the hospital because the mother came and she would not allow him to go, and she was just fine. And it's just awful what they did to this person. And no matter how much I called, they eventually made it sound like something was wrong with me for making all these reports. And I've seen this child sit in my presence for days, like staring at a wall for like 3 days, just staring and staring. You know, they wanted to, you know, it's just, and I just can't believe it, what torment this person went through. And now they are, you know, they are an adult now, young adult, but they're still, the family will treat them the same way, you know, because they're used to this. Basically, they're used to it. You know, they let them know still that you're still an outcast to us, you know. Even today, that I've seen them call their parent to say something to this parent, and they kind of like up to them. As soon as they got said something, it was like, oh, my goodness, it's still being abusive. I had to speak out again and say, look, you know, they're just letting you know. You know, they're just saying something to you, asking you a question. You know, wow. And then they realized I was on the phone and responded a little bit differently. But I'm like, is this how you speak to this person? And then they turned other people around, against them too, because they would make it seem like something was, you know, like it's just horrible. But they would even say things against this person to other people, and they would judge this person before they even knew them. So they got other people involved. It's like, wow.
Well, you're talking about it. Something. That's a terrible thing.
It's bullying.
You know, the kids
it's
go
bullying
through.
In your own family. Your own family is bullying you.
In your own
and
family.
I hear so many organizations speaking out about bullying in school. This person mm-hmm. had nowhere to turn. They were
right.
bullying at home. So they could not,
right.
you know, they could not escape it. And, you know, then they started even being harassed by them when they were in school. I mean, it was
wow.
like, oh, my goodness. And, I mean, it was at the dinner table like you spoke of. They try to have a conversation mm-hmm. and whatever, and everybody's
right.
talking and laughing at them. And as they were trying to talk and eat, and they just trying to, you know, trying to have a regular conversation and try to, you know, act like it was okay. And try. It was just horrible. And even when they were in a car together, they would do the same thing. You know, it was like everybody's talking loud and yelling at them. And it was just like, didn't want to have a voice or anything, opinion, anything he said was a joke and laughing, just loud talking, you stupid and you don't know. I mean, it just went on and on. I'm
wow.
surprised they exist today. They have thought about suicide a couple of times, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure. And I tried to intervene
wow.
in that. They tried to reach out for some help, tried to find friends
that
outside, too. Yeah, tried to find friends outside, too. But what happened, too, was people started taking advantage of them outside.
Right.
I guess they started trying to meet people online. And you know how that probably went. And I was afraid that somebody was going to try to kidnap them and take them out of state at that time, trafficking. So I was trying to do my best to try to keep that from happening because
mm-hmm.
they were looking for friends. They were looking. And, yeah, it was just horrible. So I just wanted to just say that my thing is that when you
right,
try to
wow.
reach out, as much as I tried to get help and reach out, nothing happened. And, I
wow.
the thing about it is, like, this person
yeah.
still, self-esteem is low. They don't have any friends. Nobody ever talks to them. No phone calls. Nothing. Nothing.
Oh,
can I ask
God.
You a question?
So
who did you reach out to, ma'am? I want
to
know.
Yeah,
I reached
crazy.
Out to Protective Services over and over and
okay.
over again, managers, supervisors,
wow.
everybody.
Oh, my God.
You know, I mean, it was like, and then they want to make it seem like something's wrong with me. Eventually, you keep calling because this person, of course, they would deny it.
What
the
did they say when you kept calling?
It.
Like,
the whole
when you
family
call,
would
what,
deny it. Oh, they went out and investigated,
what did
they but they just took the person's word. The whole family would deny it. The whole family tonight, if he got jumped on by a brother
right.
or whatever, they say, oh, he jumped on them, and they were defending themselves, and the whole
okay.
family.
Of course. Oh, Lord. Like a gang. Mm-hmm. It is a
yep.
gang.
I mean, I am
yep.
absolutely crying for this young man. He suffered as a child. And
I suffered.
Adult.
I suffered. And I suffered along
people,
with
right.
this person.
I
well, you know, let me say something here. When I went
mm-hmm.
to school, there was a similar situation. This kid's name was
oh.
Kenneth. I'm not going to say his last name.
Oh,
but
Lord.
he was always picked on. They would throw things at his head, you know, while
oh.
in the classroom, spitballs, all that stuff the kids do, all the stupid things. And
mm-hmm.
this kid developed, because I had gone to school with him for years, you know, this is in the grade school.
And it's amazing. This person's the same name. Just the same name. It sure is.
Wow.
Not the same
oh
one.
My God.
Yep.
So, all right,
mm-hmm.
so check it out. So All right, they were throwing things at this kid's head. And the teacher wasn't saying anything.
Lord.
All right, she sees it.
Lord.
She didn't say anything. So the kid developed all of a sudden a very nervous twitch, and he started to rock in his chair. And he would use his hands down. He'd keep his hands down. And even his fingers started to I don't know what the heck was wrong with him physically. I don't know what happened to him because I was just a kid.
Yep.
And so he developed these very strange movements, and I felt like I'm sitting there watching him because I sat close to him. I was just, you know, assigned seats, and I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, why can't someone, now what was I, in the fourth grade, the fifth grade, the sixth grade, because I was with him for a few grades, why doesn't someone do something, you know, and nothing was done. Now, I don't know what happened to him. Because I moved again. We moved around a lot. We were in New York or New Jersey, whatever.
I know what you mean.
And so I don't know what happened to him.
I've seen things like that happening, too, to where he would and what got me was one time he was out of state, and then when I seen him again, he was holding his waist all the time. I even got pictures where he's just holding his waist, you know, like holding himself. That's because what would happen is that if he winds up touching somebody, they will wind up hitting him or fighting.
Oh, my God.
So he ended up just holding his waist, and you could tell just his nervousness in his voice when he talked. You could tell him wriggling, and his body movements were just off. And so one time we went to a store together, and he thought somebody that we were getting a game system. Of course, they probably gave it to the other person, but he was like, he started crying. He would take off his clothes. He would just start ripping off his shirts and stuff, crying. And he's like almost 11 years old or so, but he's standing and just started ripping his clothes, ripping his shirt, ripping his clothes off and crying. It's like, oh, my goodness. So he went through a whole lot of changes, I'm telling you. So, but, yeah, but I called authorities. No matter where I was at, whatever state I was in, I just kept calling and calling and calling. And they would just go out and say, well, the parent needs if she's refusing counseling, that's what they kept saying. She's refusing counseling, you know, and she just, you know, and she wouldn't, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So we can't make her take counseling if she doesn't want counseling. And they never even thought about trying to take the child out of the home because, you know, basically they didn't have a father or no other relatives to send him to, and she refused to let him go with me. So they was like, so I guess they thought it was just best to keep them there. Just keep him there, you know, because he never knew his father, and they would tease him about that, you know, all kind of stuff. So, it's just horrible. Yeah. And this is a story I just want to share because abuse
and they
don't
suffer.
And bullying, oh, yes, bullying is horrible. And in this, and then when you're being bullied, people don't recognize you to be bullied in your own home. I even broke down one day. I was somewhere, not just recently, I was out somewhere or whatever, and I was thinking about it. And I just had like a flashback. I was talking with the agency, and I just said, I've even told people like this before. It was like the child that's under the stairs. Remember that little boy that was in the house?
God,
and everybody's red felt, and he was in that closet under the stairs, and the investigators would come over to search, and he was fine. You know, they wouldn't find him, you know, any signs of him being mistreated or what. They couldn't even find him. I don't know if they even found him. But they would come, and they would even search and look at the other kids, and everybody's fine, and they'd leave. But this kid is under the stairs suffering, being abused, and you know how remember the parent tried to take him away and put him in a hotel room, and the police came to look for him, tried to take him. He was all these marrow nerves. And I have even said, this is like
let me tell you something. Okay, let me tell you something. I was very bullied for a while in school, too. And with kids who are terribly bullied, this is during the time I lived in that pedophile house. So we're talking about, I think by this time I was 7. And I was being bullied very, very badly. And quite frankly, a kid either, you know, becomes very inward, they like implode, or they explode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me was, here I'm being sexually abused at this house I have to stay at by this monster. And I've got the kids in the school, so there was nowhere I could turn. And I didn't know where my mother lived. I had no phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And my stupid father, as I knew him then, took off to California. So I had no one. I did have one friend. She was 2 years older than me, but we didn't take classes together or anything, okay? I'm 7. She's 9, all right? So anyway, the point is this. I became explosive.
Mm-hmm.
I started to beat kids up. I didn't stand there. I wasn't going to be bullied anymore. I was having so many problems in this house that I was living in that I had to. I was exploding inside. And so after a while, I made the kids so scared at me. Do you remember the dodgeball games we used to play in school?
Yeah.
The dodgeball, those rubber balls.
Yeah.
Every time I was playing on my side, they would back far away from me. The kids were scared to death of me.
Oh,
and you know
wow.
something? I was relieved because one girl almost pulled her pigtail out of her head. Oh, yes, I did. And it bled really bad. Now, my mother had to give the school her number. I never got it. But so they knew who to call. And she came to the school, and she said, Carol looks dirty. She doesn't look well kept. And this is why it's being bullied and teased. And I thought to myself, yeah, and Carol's starting to fight real bad now. So I went from one to the other. Whoever bothered me, that's how I handled it. I punched them. I punched them in the nose.
But this person was in their
that's
household.
What I did.
They couldn't do that.
I was not
going to
go down.
Because if you did something, if you fought back, then the parent would fight you. The parent kicked, stomped you in the face, everything. She
my parents used to kill each other almost.
Yeah,
my father was killing my mother. She was 95 pounds.
If this person tried to fight back, I'm saying if this person tried to fight the siblings back, even if they did, they would try to fight back. But then they would still get another beating from the parent because they would say something about, oh, he did this, and the parent would put them on punishment and beat them too. So it just went on and on and on. I mean, they used to, one of them, when they got a little bit older, one of the older ones, he used to body slam him. He'd pick him up and body slam him. Or he'd just punch him in the face or whatever. I used to talk to him. I said, you need to stop punching him in the head. Do you know what you're doing? You can cause some damage to him. He didn't even stop. Body slamming to the point where his back started hurting him. He started having back problems. I was like, oh, my goodness. This is just too much. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I don't
fight
know.
Back. That's what I'm saying. Y'all got permission. Yeah, he couldn't do it. He tried, but they would like I said, they would overdo him. There were two of them. They jump on him in school before they go to school anymore. He put on somebody's house sandals or something, and two of them started beating on him right then and there. The day before, I think another, the mama, and the next day or whatever, after that, the mama had beat him because he was getting into an argument with another one for saying something to him, and then she started stomping him in the floor and kicking him in the head. It's like, come
well,
on.
I don't say that it's a good thing to, do what I did either. There should have been adults. You see, this is when schools are not doing their jobs, all right? The nurse did her job by telling my mother that Carol appears dirty. I was only allowed one bath a week, and that was on Fridays because maybe my mother would come on Saturdays to pay these monsters for taking care of me. Hello? But anyway, the point is, that's the only day I was allowed to take a bath. So I would go down in the summertime, I stayed there a year and a half, and I would go into the brook. In those days, you could look in the brook, and the water was so clean, you could see the pebbles. They were just standing right out at you. It was like being in the bathtub.
I
would just sit down with my clothes on. That's what I did. Yes, I did.
And you would think
because I didn't want to smell, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, this is how I was brought up. And with me, it didn't make me implode. It made me explode. You see these kids out on the streets, okay? And look at how they're behaving. And think about the background that they came from.
I know.
Okay? So a lot of those kids
like,
that came from that background.
They come in the background, And I've
warned
people about that. I've even told
them.
That's
right.
I said, you
it's
are
volatile.
This.
And that's what we're teaching
you
our kids to be volatile.
So,
That's right.
As the system is allowing this to happen. So,
protective services.
They're going
that's
to jail for 2 days.
And
or
not
something.
Just that, even in
that's
school,
disgusting.
If you find a person, person who's basically so withdrawn, going to school, hardly talking, don't really associate, not really active. You know how guys be more, hey, you know, they kind of like quiet to themselves, laid back, not saying. You got to suspect something.
Those are
you
signs.
Gotta
exactly.
Of course.
Something.
That's right.
And nobody.
But let me say
anything,
something here.
Did
now
anything.
That we're on that subject, hold on a second. Don't forget, I've worked in mental facilities. I looked up Greystone last night. They've closed it down. Okay? And you know who was in there? Very cool. Well, it's not cool for him. But Woody Guthrie, he was a folk singer. Mm. He was in there in 1956 and 1961. Now, the States, I didn't work back then there. I didn't work there until the early 90s. But anyway, the point is, the States, that place has been going open and shut, open and shut, open and shut, and so have the other mental facilities. The States are closing down the mental hospitals, facilities like I used to work at, which was, well, it was high. It was very, very, you have to be careful because we had murderers on there. We had our own police force. Anyway, everything's being shut down. Now, that's what's out on the street, too. You see? So these people that had the mental facilities to go to or be put in, you know, by court, they're not put in there by court anymore, and they certainly don't go in on their own admission, okay?
A lot of abuse.
So these people who are volatile, who are murderers, the sociopaths, the psychopaths, a lot of them are out on the street. They're on the street.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why a kid can walk down the street and get shot in the head, mind his own business, doesn't know who he is or who they are or anything, doesn't even see it coming. Family, all these things, all these things. So, you know, the way you're brought up, what you see when you're a child, the environmental conditioning, which they use with the sociopaths, not the psychopaths. They can come from actually good homes. This is what people think, they're good homes. But the sociopaths, many times, is environmental conditioning. Now, these people are running the streets. A lot of them have come from mental institutions that have closed down. So when you have kids that, you know, go through all this stuff, they either turn very tough, they get numb, they don't care about people, they don't have a conscience, you know, they don't care if they're shooting people, they don't care if they're wrecking buildings, you know, smashing the windows and stealing and all this other stuff. And I'm not saying that all of them are coming from mental institutions, no, but a lot of them are, okay? You have all different kinds of people out there. So we have to watch our asses in plain English. So the long-term effects, because of poor treatment from parents, okay, parents that never happened to sit and look at their children, talk to their children, guide their children, you know, they don't know what they're doing to their kid, and maybe they don't care. And in gaslighting, they'll have the people say that they're crazy, you know, they're too sensitive.
Something's going on.
You're imagining things. You have a terrible memory,
right,
and all this other stuff. It goes on and on. And then the kid starts thinking, well, maybe I am crazy, instead of actually knowing
Carol.
The truth. Yes, I know the time is over with. Yeah.
Hello.
It's
928. Can we? It's 928. Can we hear from Brother Bill, please?
Okay,
I have
an
announcement that I want. I have an interjection I want to make, which is that, you know, tonight was one of those nights where we didn't have a guest. And we've had a few of them recently. And we've struggled with what to do about that, because a lot of times getting a guest at the last minute is tough. And when we don't have a guest, what we've been doing is what we did tonight. We do a discussion show where anybody can call in, and we'll see what, you know, we don't have to have a planned theme or topic. It just goes around and around and around, which is great. I mean, I'm just pointing out that tonight's show had 8 or 9 people on it at one point, and it was never dull, okay? So the point is that we're going to have to continue to do this, because we don't have anybody who's out there really looking for, you know, whose job it is, say, or commitment it is to find new guests. So I just want to make people aware that these shows are going to be listed on the front page. It says not yet booked or discussion show. So if there's no guests by the time the show should begin, then it'll be a discussion show, okay? And I don't think we're suffering. I think we're getting a lot of good things. Yeah.
I wanted to
thank everybody. Yeah, we got 9 people, so that there is interest. You know,
absolutely.
And this is without people knowing. So I think if we promote this Monday, Wednesday, Friday stuff, we'll do better. All right, Carol, I'll let you go. You got probably got the message.
Yes,
one
I
minute.
Did. Yes,
well,
I
it's
did.
9:30 now.
Okay, everyone, thank you so much. We had a nice nice panel tonight for
thank
calling
you.
In.
Love you guys.
Yes, and love you too, Bill.
Thank you.
And we'll be back on Monday with or without a guest. I'm not sure. I have to look at the schedule. But you know what? We're just fine on our own because we just know what to talk about. Yes, we do, because when it comes to child abuse, unfortunately, you never run out of things, okay? So, and then it goes into today's things, and that's fine too. And I think it's
good.
A better show. So anyway,
okay.
Good night, everybody. Okay, have a good weekend. Stay safe. And I love you guys. You know that. Good night now.
Love you too. Right,
good night.
Good night.
God bless.
Okay.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.